University of Georgia Griffin campus invites you to join us for news and information about the many and varied programs and activities at the UGA Griffin campus. Information about gardening, the agriculture programs, and your UGA degree at the University of Georgia Griffin campus. Your UGA degree is closer than you think. This program is made possible by Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray & Company Realtors. Listen each Thursday at 9 o'clock a.m. for the UGA Griffin Campus News. This program is produced by WKEU AM 1450 and 102.3 FM and The Rock 88.9 FM and streamed live on our website, WKEUradio.com. Join us now with our guests from the UGA Griffin Campus.
And we welcome in on this blustery and somewhat misty Thursday morning. This is the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News. I'm Tony Brasky, WKEU AM and FM Sports Director, being joined in the studio today by Bob Westerfield, the Extension Horticulturalist and Coordinator on the University of Georgia Griffin Campus, but not just the Griffin Campus, as we have learned in Bob's many recent visits. He handles this on a statewide basis, and he is joined today by a program assistant and student at Gordon College and a whale of a softball player in her own right, Mackenzie English. Thank you both for being part of the program today.
Well, thank you. Good to be back.
Well, we'll just start with the basics for those who might not be aware. What exactly is Extension Service, and how does it connect and relate to the University of Georgia?
Well, that's a great question. A lot of people sometimes don't even, when they hear the word Extension Service, they're not sure what it means and that there's any connection at all to UGA. But it actually comes from back when the University of Georgia was first created, and I guess that was way back when, in the 1700s. Later on, there was something called the Morrell Act, and that Morrell Act basically, it made a university a land-grant institution.
The University of Georgia is the oldest land-grant university in the United States.
I want to say 1872, but don't quote me. Well, you are quoting me. I'm on the radio on that. But somewhere around that era, we took on the land-grant institution, which is basically what that does is it basically says that that university is going to be assisting people out in the counties. In our case, you know, it's heavily related to agriculture, but there's other things involved. If you fast forward today, you know, we do things like the Small Business Development Center. We've got home economics and family issue type work that they work in. So it's a lot of different things. But still, as a land-grant college, that means that college is designated, at least portions of it, to serve the public.
As a matter of fact, right now, I mean, in another extension of the Extension Service, through the month of March and into early April, they are offering free tax preparation services here at the Spalding County office.
Well, I didn't know that one. I might have to get over there. But, they do a lot of programs like that. And, you know, you think about, a lot of people think, okay, county extension agents, you know, those are the agricultural guys down in South Georgia working the farmers. And, yes, that is true. But it really extends way beyond that now. We have got county extension agents, I believe, in 159 of our counties, which is all the counties we got. And they're even in the urban areas, particularly up and around Atlanta and Columbus and places like that, where they work with urban issues. It might not be hardcore, you know, farming, but they will work with the landscape industry, with child obesity programs, with literacy, a lot of different things that would relate more to urban areas.
Well, I tell you another thing that might, and you tell me if this is true, I would think that with all the construction and building that goes on in the downtown urban areas, that I would suspect that extension agents are often required to consult on green space issues.
They are. We've been heavily involved with that. A lot of the agents have called me for recommendations, but everything from planting to a little bit about soil, you know, control and erosion that might be taking place with some of the building sites. But yeah, we've been very heavily involved with that. You know, and there's a lot of trees in Atlanta. You think about it being pavement, but there are certainly lots of greenscape, if you will, and sometimes that stuff has issues. I can remember in particular back, if you go back in, I guess it was, 1996, the Olympics were here, and all the landscape that went in with that around the Atlanta areas and the highways, and there were just, you know, all kinds of calls to the agents, and including myself, I went out and made many field visits on that just to keep that stuff looking good for the Olympics.
Well, do folks contact you directly? I mean, is there a hierarchy where you start with a county agent and then work your way up the ladder, or do some requests come directly to you?
I do get occasional calls from folks that call the Griffin campus, and they'll transfer a call to me if it's related to what I work on. I am essentially a state specialist, and my specialty is the vegetables and the fruit type arena. Technically, the way it works is folks should contact their local county extension office. The local county office, we've got county agents there that are field representatives. What they do is they'll take the first shot at either trying to figure out what the problem is and the answer, or if they don't know, then they've got a network of state specialists, including myself, that they can call upon. So really, that call should come through the county extension office. The county agents would get in touch with us. Sometimes it's a matter of them sending over a picture or a live sample of a plant, in my case. Or, you know, it might be that I have to make a field visit, but it's usually through that county office we like to work. And that way there's a local contact, particularly, you know, if it comes to things like, you know, soil tests are needed or someone needs to be kind of on hand.
What type of formal training is required in order to become an extension agent?
You know, it's really has changed a little bit over the years, but it still is going to, if you want to be a county agent, per se, right now we're requiring a master's in some type of agriculture-related field. Now, that could be forestry, it could be entomology, you know, anything along those lines, agriculture. We used to hire on a bachelor's degree level, and they may still on occasion do that with experience, but they're going to require a master's usually within a certain amount of years. As you kind of go up the line, most of our state specialists will have PhDs, not necessarily having to have that, but most of them will. So, you know, it's a fairly educated group of folks at the university. They do put you through a lot of requirements, and not only is there the college requirements, they will put, particularly county agents, they go through extensive core training, they call it, and that's 3 years of week and sometimes 2 or 3 week long trainings that they go to learn more about their topics.
Well, let's turn now to Mackenzie English, who is a program assistant for you. She's currently a student at Gordon College, a member of the fast pitch softball team. I think that's all they offer in college now. They don't do the slow pitch anymore. But how did you get involved in the program?
I actually go to church with Mr. Bob, and he brought it to my attention, and it just went from there.
We talked a little bit before the program started. You really didn't have much of an interest in horticulture at your onset. Have you developed some interest in it and just, you know, kind of being thrust into the world of agriculture?
Right. I didn't know much at all. And since starting in January, I've learned a lot, and it's become very interesting. I've learned a lot of different things. I've learned how to plant, and it's just been fun, so.
Well, looking back, you know, you probably had already taken some of your core biology courses before you started in the program with Bob. Looking back, do you see where a lot of what you've learned in biology classes when it comes to plants and cell structure and things like that, you're putting to use now?
Yes, a lot.
Well, what do you plan to do in the future? I mean, is horticulture in your future, or are you looking at doing a little something else for a career?
Horticulture, it's not my future. I'm looking to go into the medical field somehow, so.
I was told maybe possibly radiology might be in your future.
Yes, sir.
And you would attend maybe Southern Crescent Technical College, which has a fine radiology program. Mm-hmm. Look, nurses are always in demand. So, you know, you're picking a field that you certainly wouldn't have a whole lot of trouble finding a job. Now, tell us about your softball experiences, you know. The one shame about Southern Crescent is that they don't have a team. Mm-hmm. So are you prepared for the career to come to an end because of your educational choices?
I've been playing since I was probably 4. So it's going to be hard, but I think since I've been playing it every year since I was that young, it's kind of getting tiring. But I feel like once it comes, it's going to be sad, but
a little burnout factor.
Yeah.
Now, how do you balance softball with school? I mean, because the demands between practices and games, particularly now, you know, now that you're into your season, you know, how do you balance the demands of athletics and academics as a student athlete?
We talk about this all the time with our team. We have to take advantage of our off days and our time between classes and practice. It's a lot. It takes a lot for one person to do, but you get used to it.
Well, Bob, getting back to you, Is there a charge to use extension services in each of the counties?
I'm not going to leave softball yet. I'm going to go back and say, I watched the young lady here play softball yesterday. And I can tell you, back in the day, in my much earlier days, I used to play baseball and, you know, hit pretty well. But I'll tell you what, them girls can sling a pitch. And it ain't very far. It's almost like the pitcher's about 3 feet away from the batter to me. And whether I could hit one of them or not, I doubt it.
Well, no. I being the sports director here, you know, sports is kind of my thing. And Mackenzie, I'm sure you know this, that from a physics standpoint, a softball pitch actually comes in as fast, if not faster, than major league fastballs based on distance and speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would not doubt that. You have no time to think about it. I think you just got to say, well, I'm going to swing at this next one. I don't care where it is. And I was telling there was a girl on the other team, that a little third baseman girl, and that girl had an arm on her like a major leaguer. She was zinging that ball. So I didn't realize they could throw that hard.
What position do you play?
I play outfield.
Well, you got to have an arm to get the ball in from that. So are you much of a hitter?
I'm the leadoff batter for my team. Yeah. So
that good speed, or because you're on base ability?
Pretty much get on base.
Well, look, that's got speed too, I saw.
Well, that's the thing, you know, sabermetric studies, which is kind of applied baseball mathematics, show that it's more important to get on base than it is to have speed in the leadoff position. Because I'll ask you a trivia question, and we're getting kind of off course here, but if the leadoff batter gets on in any given inning, do you know the percentage of the likelihood your team is likely to score a run that inning than if the leadoff batter does not get on?
75%.
Bob, you want to venture just a guess?
I'm going to say 30%.
240%.
Oh, my gosh.
You are 2.5 times more likely to score if the leadoff batter gets on.
You better get on more then.
I know.
That is wild, but yeah, I mean, it does seem to kind of, when you think about it, that leadoff batter gets on and it gets in the heads of the other team, and it's like, we got the first one up there, and now they're on.
So, well, it does, and it, you know, it opens up so many offensive capabilities for the offense. You can move runners over. You can play hit and run. There's so many different things, ways to put pressure on the defense. And so, yeah, 240%, that's, you know, most people answer like you guys did, you know, 30, 50, 70%. It's actually two and a half times.
I saw something yesterday I've never seen before in a game, and I had to ask her when she came between. They always play doubleheaders in between. She came out and talked with us, and I was like, what in the world was your first base coach doing? Every time one of the girls would come off a base when the game is over, or they get hit. That first base coach would give her something. I'm like, what was she handing you? She was handing out candy, is what I understand. So
if we get on base, our coach gives us candy.
I may have to get in the game.
I'm here to tell you. Like, it looks like I've been playing for a number of years.
I was like, I hadn't seen that one before. That's a good motivation. But getting back to your original question, do we charge for services at Extension? The answer is yes and no. To utilize Extension service, if you call a county agent or you happen to get me, no, we're not going to charge you for answers. We're going to help you. We've got tons of publications that are free. On occasion, we will do a program, particularly when it comes to like the commercial industry. We had one several weeks ago, a pruning workshop, where we're primarily drawing in commercial landscape audiences for certification. Sometimes the county agents will have similar programs, and oftentimes there will be a small fee. Typically, that fee is going to help to pay for handouts, for a meal that's going to be provided, and things like such. Even along the lines of cattle programs, sometimes county agents will hold, you know, livestock-type programs where there'll be a small fee. It's going to cover basically putting that program together. So, yeah, we do have a fee along those lines. If you're soil sampling, which we offer soil sampling at the county offices, it's usually a very minimal fee of like $8.
Yeah, it's under $10.
Yeah, and you know, we can run other type tests and like water tests and stuff that there'll be a small fee. So, yeah, basically we're only charging to cover expenses. But as far as just, you know, you want to come in and talk to an agent, you want to call them up and ask, hey, you know, when do I fertilize my grass, or why is this plant turning yellow? No, there'll be no charge at all for that.
Well, just in the course of my limited history of producing, or, you know, being a part of this program, I've seen a lot of turnover of late. There were, you know, some of the extension agents were near the retirement age, and now it seems like you have a lot of new blood coming into the county's particularly here within our little Northwest district. When I say little, it's very right. expansive.
You're 100% correct on that, and I think there's a number of reasons for that. One of those can be related to the budget, and we're also right now kind of having a tough budget year, but there were back in the early 90s, we really had a crunch on our budget. We had like a 28% cut. We actually let a few people go, and it was one of the few times we've ever done that, and for a while, we were on total hiring freeze, like a lot of the state funded programs. And so, yeah, we weren't getting many new county agents in. And when the funding finally kind of kicked back in, we had a massive hiring. And so, you know, we went from having none to, you know, sometimes we were getting 20 or 25 or 30 new county agents coming on board. So that's one thing. What I have found on the extension side of things, particularly with the county agents, it's one of those where, you know, you come in and you either really love that position and you love doing it, or you get burned out real fast and you're gone. So we have a lot of folks that will come in for a couple of years and it's not what they thought it was going to be. And it's a very busy job. I mean, it's sometimes it's weekends, nights, you're doing programs. And so it can kind of run you hard for a while. And some people weren't expecting that, like, I'm going to find something else. The other thing sometimes, you know, I think they've gotten away from this a little bit, is a lot of the more agricultural agents sometimes will come in and have to handle a lot of the 4-H. And the 4-H is our youth component part of extension. And some just absolutely love it and do a phenomenal job. Some are not as versed in working with youth, and so it's a little bit uncomfortable for them. And sometimes if that shift doesn't ever occur, you know, they might try to find a different position. So I've seen that happen.
Yeah, I mean, 4-H is very expensive, and it's, you know, it's particularly here in the Northwest District. I mean, we must have one whale of a program, because I get epistles from the county and the extension office about how many winners we have in the various competitions that they hold all around the state.
They do. The 4-H is a big part of the extension service, and a lot of folks don't even realize that's part of us. But, yeah, you know, if you look at the university, it's broken down into three major components. Everyone thinks the University of Georgia, they think of teaching, you know, the students, and that's sure, that's a huge part of it. So we have the teaching side. Well, even in my department, I'm in the horticulture department, we have the teaching, we call it the academic side. Then we have the research side. The research are the ones that are out there working on, you know, different varieties, on diseases, on all kinds of facets of research in multi-disciplines. And then so you've got the teaching, you've got the research, and then you have the extension side. The extension side I call the public service or the delivery side. We take the information out from what we've gathered in research and we try to give it to the public in many different forums. So there's those three components right there. Of part of the extension, there's three parts of extension, and that is the agricultural side, which can even include, we talked about Atlanta, being landscape issues and maybe drainage issues and things like that. Also in extension, we have what's called home economics. Family consumer science is another way they call that.
Right, this isn't teaching you how to bake a loaf of bread.
No, I mean, they can do that. Extensive. Yeah, and they still do that like they did in the old times, but now it's more extensive. It could be like we talked about, like obesity programs, which I need to attend. They also have, you know, things like working with budgeting, you know, and how to survive in rough times, that kind of type programming. And then finally, we have the youth component, which is the 4-H. And the 4-H is throughout the state. We've got some major camps out there where kids can go to attend for a week's camp normally. And the 4-H is more than just, you know, having fun. They teach them skills, public speaking. Again, they'll teach them about how to shop, consumer type, you know, purchasing, many different avenues that they work with.
And state congresses, I mean, everybody is aware of the, I think for the most part, the 4-H camp out at Rock Eagle in
Eatonton. Absolutely. And so, they do have a bunch of competitions as well. I mean, there's everything from judging chickens and cows and steers to, I think you mentioned there, you know, they've got shooting sports. So there's archery competitions.
Which is becoming wildly popular.
I mean, it
has not been, it wasn't that long ago that it was instituted, and it is taken off.
Kids just absolutely love the shooting sports, yeah. And then it kind of, the Super Bowl of that occurs over at Rock Eagle once a year.
Well, like there was a Spalding County winner in a piano competition. I mean, you would not necessarily associate 4-H with piano, but we had a winner, Will Alexander, finished third in the state, in the district,
right,
at the most recent competition held last month.
It's just, I help out usually once or twice a year, and I go to help judge some of these competitions, and it's just amazing how many different, you know, places where a child could plug into. I mean, anything from, like, pet care to you know, I had one talking about how to grow mushrooms to, you know, singing, you know, like you could go in there and singing or public speaking. They've got so many different things. In fact, Mackenzie, I think you were in 4-H, weren't you, when you, what was it, like fourth grade, fifth grade?
Yeah, in elementary school, yes, sir.
And that's when, you know, most county extension agents have either do it themselves or have someone in their office to go to the elementary schools and introduce mm-hmm. the students to the program.
That's correct.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder with my next question, but you know, you mentioned how when the extension offices conduct programs or they do the soil sample testing, they're not really turning a profit in order to further the budget of the extension agency as a whole. You know, you're basically just covering your cost. So is state funding pretty much the only avenue that the extension service gets?
That's a great question. The answer is no, and it has changed over the years. We have a lot of state funding. That's that major component of our budget, but that's not the only component. We are also federally funded. About 16% of our budget comes from the federal. And then when you comes to the county agents, you know, talk about your Spalding County agent, your Coweta County agent, they also get county funding. So their salary comes a little bit from federal, sometimes a major portion from the state, and sometimes up to 50% is coming out of the county budget. So we work very closely with county budgets. The county provides usually the facility, which is the county office. Sometimes and very often they provide vehicles for the county agents to utilize, pickup trucks, vans for the kids, travel, and so forth. So not only that, as of late, and I say as of late, over the last 10 years, they have pushed us hard, particularly on the specialist level and research level, to find grant funding. So, you know, there's a sizable portion of our funding that comes from grants. Miss McKenzie sitting next to me right here is the product of a USDA grant. The labor money I got from that is a grant-funded project that I'm paying her from.
Well, if I recall correctly, McKenzie, Bob has stated on several occasions, you know, that he loves that technology has made his job a little bit easier in terms of his availability, but he's not a big fan of the keyboard. Do you find yourself doing a lot of that type of work as well in your involvement with the program?
Yes, sir. I type for him. We do PowerPoints. We work a lot, or I do a lot of the typing, but he's right there with me. So
it's all locked in my head, but it can't necessarily get to the keyboard for me. So I have to hire good fingers.
Well, you know, you mentioned that, you know, there's pretty much an extension service agency in all 159 counties in the state. And you travel as much as anyone because of your role.
Right.
And, you know, being centrally located in Griffin's got to be a little bit of an advantage. But with how many counties roughly would you associate with for a visit over the course of a calendar year?
So my heaviest travel time is right now. It's from about the first part of January all the way through the end of April. And answer that question, I had a real what I call backyard program yesterday because I only had to go up to see Frank Hancock, who's our county agent up in Henry County. So that's like next door. I'm actually tonight I will be leaving to get up closer. I've got a program early in the morning in Calhoun, which is North Georgia, Gordon County, and that's a six-hour workshop I'm doing there. Following week I turn over and go to Douglas County. Then I'll be down to Camden County the following week, which is St. Mary's. And, you know, we might as well change zip codes and area codes and everything else when you go to that direction. It's way down there by Florida. So I probably, you know, out of all the counties on a yearly basis, I'm probably going to be in easily 30 of them or more doing a talk somewhere.
And what range of programs do you do? Like, for example, mm-hmm. just at the end of February, you were part of the pruning and equipment workshop
Correct.
Held here on the UGA Griffin campus. Will you give that same presentation to other counties, or is pretty much every time you go to a county, is your program based on the specific needs of that county?
It's going to be more based on the specific needs of the county and usually what that county agent is requesting. So a lot of my programs are invited. That the pruning one we talked about, that's one that we developed. Another cohort, Bodie Panisi and myself, put that together that we held at the Griffin campus. So that was sort of our program. But I would say the majority of my programs are if you want to call it, reaction program. Someone calls me to speak, and I say, okay, what do you need a topic on? And then I will prepare something and go do that. That being said, I would say probably 80% of my programs are going to be related to something that has to do with vegetables or fruit-type plants. And it could be everything from selecting varieties to how to plant them to troubleshooting and controlling, you know, diseases, insects. But I also cross over the line. I talk about I can do an ornamental program on, you know, selecting ornamentals. I do an equipment workshop in some of the parts of the state where we talk about how to maintain equipment, keep it running, you know, landscape type stuff. So it's pretty varied, which I like. I even do wildlife programs. I went and talked to a group of bird plantation owners up in North Georgia last year. It was pretty cool. And I talked to them about planting cover crops for their fields and things like that. So most folks in extension side of things are sort of what do you call that, jack of all trades, maybe masters of none. I don't know. We can cover about anything.
Well, do you have any particular favorites? I mean, programs that, you know, especially when you're making the long drive to somewhere like St. Mary's, or like you say, having to go to Calhoun, that's no short jaunt in itself. You know, are there particular programs that you pardon the expression, but you're a little more jacked up to do? Because when you get there, it's something
right.
that really is in your wheelhouse?
Certainly when I do like a general vegetable talk to what I call consumers, and not so much the growers, we'll do them, but you got folks coming there and it's going to be the first time they're thinking about planting a garden or whatever. That really kind of gets me excited. I love talking about vegetables, and if you ask anybody, when I give a talk like that, it almost seems like I'm as excited that first time as I've done it 400 times before. So I just enjoy talking about things that we can grow and harvest. I don't get as excited when I'm talking about ornamentals and flowers and stuff. I can certainly do it, but that's my wife's department. I leave all the flower stuff to her. But if it's got something to do with, hey, we can put it in our mouths, you know, a vegetable or something like that, yeah, I'm going to get excited about it. I also love equipment. I'm all the time buying and experimenting with different types of gardening equipment for vegetable gardens, for landscape. And so, you know, if it has to do with equipment, I'm your man. I'll bring props with me. I'll show them how to use it, how to take it apart. I just always been fascinated with guy type toys, new stuff.
Well, do you have people in your department or other agents around the state in various counties that you can delegate some of these things to if the subject matter is going to be something that you know they're well versed in?
Yeah, we can. And a lot of the agents, you know, particularly the ones who've been around a long time, a lot of the stuff.
The guy in Henry County, for example.
Yeah, I mean, Frank's been around forever. And
so, yeah, he's been on the program several times.
He could probably handle most of the talks that I could. But you know how it is. You kind of like to bring in a variance and bring in a couple of different speakers. And certainly, you know, if it's like, let's see, I had one. Here's a good one. I had somebody the other day ask me to come talk about cannabis, you know, marijuana. And I was like, well, you know.
Were you high on the idea?
I was like, yeah, I know a little bit about it. I said, but that is not me. And I said, I don't normally turn down a talk. But I said, look, I'm just not versed enough to cover that. I said, we do have a guy in our department. His name's Dr. Tim Coulong. He's up in Athens. And he's our point man for the marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I said, he's the one you really need to talk to. He knows about the laws now, the legality of it, where it's going. So, yeah, there's times when I get a request, I'm like, that's just not me. That's not my cup of tea, and you're going to need to. But I will normally have someone who I can refer to.
Well, I know the answer to this question already, but we talked about this several times when you've appeared on the program, that the different types of soils that you can find here just within the borders of the state can vary so wildly from the Piedmont area to the sandy soils of South Georgia to the red clays that we have here. When you go around and travel to do some of these programs, do you kind of have to remind yourself what the soil is going to be in the various counties that you'll be visiting?
That's a great question, and the answer is yes. It's you know, it's not like one shoe fits all type thing or one size fits all. You know, I was in Henry County yesterday, so when we were talking about gardening, it was kind of like, okay, most of y'all are experiencing clay soils. Let me tell you how to amend them, or this is where your pH will probably be. When I go down to Camden County in about 2 weeks, I'm going to be in soil it's either going to be a mucky soil or it's going to be sand. And so it'll be completely different when it comes to, now the varieties will probably be the same, but yeah, the time that you amend, how much fertility you put out, it changes with the type of soil. So I have to adjust that and be cognizant of where I am. And then you might be in an area even like around these parts, some you'll find some sandy loamy soils. On my farm, it's very sandy loamy, but then you can go right down the road and hit hard clay. So, you know, you have to be able to work with not only the soil types but also the climatic differences. You know, when we're talking about planting vegetables, I always tell them to be more cognizant of the soil temperature, not the air temperature, and that's going to vary, particularly between North Georgia and very South Georgia. So that could be a planting season difference of 3 weeks. So you have to know where you are and kind of what to say for that location.
When it comes to soil temperatures, because you bring up a good point, I wouldn't have thought of that, but I do know that soil temperatures are available on one of the University of Georgia weather sites.
Where absolutely.
How many miles does it take for there to be an appreciable change in soil temperature?
Okay, so yeah, we do have, I'll say this, we have a great weather site, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's the website is georgiaweather.net, N-E-T. And when you go there, you'll find just a ton of information, but you'll see, the first thing you'll see is a map of the state. What I suggest you doing is click on the closest location to where you live. Now, it might be, in answer to your question, it might be a county away. Maybe we have so many stations, you'll probably find something, but maybe it's two counties away. But as long as you're within a few counties of your location, the soil temperatures are not going to vary that much.
And when we talk about change, we're talking generally more north to south as opposed to east and west?
Correct. Although, you know, if you get in closer to the coastal areas, and we're talking about, you know, I'm actually headed there this weekend, Jekyll Island and Sea Island, that is a moderating effect as well on the soil temperatures and the air temperatures. So, you know, the west from between here and, say, over to Columbus, not a huge difference, but there is a difference between, you know, here and right on the coast because we get modifying effects from the ocean.
How deep down, when you're trying to dig, say you want to plant a tree or a plant, how far down do you have to go to see a difference in the soil temperature? I mean, because even on some of your websites,
right,
you have an automated weather website that shows all the weather information from every site that UGA has and soil temperatures. And I was noticing that between 4 and 8 inches, there can be as much as a 2 to 3 degree difference sometimes.
It is. So, yeah, and a lot of times, and folks will ask me that question, well, I went to your website and it shows, you know, the soil temperatures at 2 inches, 4 inches, 6 inches, or whatever. I said, yeah, you'll notice there'll be a degree or two difference. I normally tell folks, for planting's sake, just pay attention to where the root zone of that plant is. And most root zones are actually in the upper couple of inches. So I say maybe go to 4 inches and use that soil temperature to gauge on. But to answer your question, yeah, as you're getting deeper, you can see a soil change. But for most part, where the root systems are on trees, plants, they're in the upper 12 inches of the soil. The variance won't be so great.
And what's the difference in moisture levels as we go up and down in the soil? Does that make a difference in what you can plant and how well something might take?
It does, and particularly with all the rain that we have had lately, we really have to pay attention to the soil moisture. You know, a lot of folks are seeing it's going to get 70 degrees here, it's going to be warm, oh, maybe I should go out and plant the garden. But not only the soil temperature you have to worry about, it's the soil moisture. And we're so saturated right now, the top surface is still too wet. But yeah, sometimes as you're digging down, even though it seems like the crust or the top's dried out, you get into moisture a couple inches down. So it can vary in percentages. What you're looking for is you'd like to have soil moisture somewhere around 20 or 30% when you're digging a garden, tilling, or something like that. And you might see that on the top inch, but if you're not careful, you better dig down a little bit and check, because it could be 50% moisture down, you know, 4 inches down.
Well, I don't recall if it was the last time you were here or the time before, but because we love having you and you're just a wealth of information. But we talked about with the dirt, you know, just the incredible amount of rain that we've had, that people might want to be a little bit cautious about digging right now and trying to plant because the soil is just so thick and filled with moisture that it might, you know, inhibit root growth.
Absolutely true. So we were talking about that at a program yesterday, and you just really need to have a good feel for what the soil moisture is before you plant landscape plants, before you go in there and till your garden. our farm over in the Rock here in Rock, Georgia, it happens to be, we're kind of blessed with a very loamy, sandy soil. And so it actually dried out enough for me to get the tractor and the tiller in there and do some tilling this weekend, which is amazing because all the rain we had, but it was dry enough. And the way to tell real simply, you can go on that weather site we talked about, and it will tell you what the soil moisture is in those weather stations at 2 inches, 4 inches, 6 inches. Or use your sophisticated instrument tool that God gave you called your hand and grab a clump of soil and squeeze it together like a kid you were going to make a dirt bomb and poke your finger in it. If it kind of sticks in there like Play-Doh, it's too wet to work that soil. But if you were able to grab, make a clod and poke it once or twice and it breaks up into little clusters, that's perfect. That's right around 20 or 30% moisture.
Well, Mackenzie, being an outfielder, you're a little more versed to grass than dirt. I mean, are you having to get your hands dirty as part of your involvement with the program?
Yes, sir. Right now, our outfield is muddy from all the rain. So when we're diving and sliding, we're definitely getting dirty out there.
So you have no problem with getting your hands dirty and as with part of the program, except when you're typing and doing the PowerPoint presentations. That's probably not the time to have that happen, I guess.
Right.
She's fixing to get versed and getting dirty in the garden here for too long. And one thing she did, I think the first time, we taught her how to drive a tractor. Was that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She did real well. She didn't run over too many people. So.
Is that a different type of experience? I mean, is that something that, wow, I can drive a tractor now?
Yeah, I was really excited.
I can see that. Is there a point where tilling or tractoring is counterproductive when it's too wet?
Yeah, when the ground is wet and you're thinking, oh gosh, it's so wet now, that tiller is just going to work its way through so easily through the soil. And while there is some truth to that, what you'll wind up noticing after that tiller goes through is you got all these little soil balls in there, these little clumps. And actually what happens is it's compacting those clumps. So it's a worse environment for transplants for seeds because what it does, it creates a lot of little air pockets, which you might think, hey, that's good aeration, but not when it comes to seed germination. You want the seed to be kind of firm in the soil, which is going to increase germination rates. So that tilling when it's wet is going to harm the soil, and it's hard to overcome that once you've done that without some more manicure work later on.
You had mentioned this before, too. Generally speaking, through the spring and summer planting seasons, and even into the fall, roughly an inch of rain per week is what can be considered manageable.
Right, particularly when it comes, say, to vegetables. Most vegetables are going to survive on an inch of irrigation that either you provide or the good Lord provides per week. There are some exceptions to that. A lot of people, which I think is a good idea, they love to plant in raised beds. Raised beds are kind of usually made out of wood, but can be made out of a lot of different materials like bricks and cinder blocks. And so you have a soil, if you will, above the ground. When you have that scenario, one of the advantages is that it drains very well, so you don't have to worry as much about all the rain we're getting. But the other disadvantage is it drains very well. So the advantage is it drains, and the disadvantage it drains, you have to water more frequently because it drains so quickly. So on raised beds, you might be watering maybe 3 times a week to keep the plants in optimum form. But it's one of those things where it's hard to say hard, cold fact, yes, you need to put 1 inch of water out on your garden. Depends on the type of soils you have. If they're sandier, they're certainly going to drain faster and more water might be needed. If it's heavy clay soils, which a lot of people have, you might get away with just 1 inch per week.
Are you a fan for vegetable growers of the Miracle-Gro type products, or would you prefer that growers just stick to the natural course?
Right, so the Miracle-Gro is kind of a trade name, and they have many products under there. Perhaps the most infamous product they have is their fertilizer, line. And Miracle-Gro, no, that's job security for me. it's a good product, but we get so many questions off of Miracle-Gro, and the typical question that comes in, if you will, is, and I've had this 100 times, but it's like, hey, about Mr. Bob, I got a tomato plant, and it's 8 foot tall. It is just as green as a green bean, this tomato plant, but I hadn't seen the first bloom on it. I hadn't seen the first tomato. And without even a second thought, I go, oh, and you're using Miracle-Gro. And they're like, hi, what are you looking at me? How did you see that? And I'm like, oh, no, I've been around a long time. And what it is this. It's not just Miracle-Gro. You got Peter's plant food, Jack's plant food, but any of these emulsifiable powders that go into solution to make fertilizer, they're very hard to calibrate, to know how much you're putting out. And a lot of them are very high in nitrogen. So that nitrogen is one of the elements, essential elements, that causes a plant to push up new growth, which is a good thing, until you want it to start to fruit. And if you keep adding nitrogen to that plant, it'll continue to grow and get bigger and bigger without ever putting any thought to reproduction. And reproduction is essentially what we're eating. You know, we're eating the reproduction part of the bean, of the tomato, of the squash. So you have to throttle back on the nitrogen. So the answer is, yeah, I mean, Miracle-Gro makes a good product. Most people need to read the label on the back, and whatever it says, I would say cut it in half to start with, because you're going to probably put too much out.
Well, you know, it's hard to get away from the inordinate amount of rain that we've had through the course of, you know, the first 2.5 months of this year. But what do you tell people who erroneously, like me, will believe, well, with such a surplus, I won't need to water nearly so often because the ground already has all it can hold?
I'm already hearing that comment walking around like, well, we're probably good through July with this rain. I'm like, not really. We'll probably be praying for rain again come June and July, be my prediction, like we were last year. I think we were on the radio program. We were talking about, we hadn't had rain in 3 months. We'll probably get back there. Yes, having this much water is replenishing a lot of the groundwater. It's replenishing, you know, places where we're trying to fill up storage water for drinking, you know, in lakes and things like that. At the end of the day, it's not going to do a whole lot to help you mid-course into the garden season. Whatever water's there is going to have gone down into the water table. You're more concerned with what's happening in the top 4 inches of the soil, so you are going to still have to provide supplemental irrigation. It doesn't matter if we've had, you know, 49 inches of rain already this year. If it doesn't continue to come in a more consistent pattern, you will still have to irrigate your garden to keep your vegetables going.
And, you know, there's nothing you can do about too much rain. I mean, if nature decides it wants to rain 38 gallons tonight, well, that's just, you know, something as a gardener.
If I knew how to control that, I wouldn't be sitting on this radio program. I'd be on a yacht somewhere because I can control the weather. But you're right. There's nothing we can do. It is delaying a lot of the procedures that should be occurring right now. You know, it's a good time to plant potatoes in the ground right now. Well, I mean, it might be sopping wet in a lot of gardens. We can certainly get in some late cool season varieties. We're trying to warm up enough to get to the spring garden. That's probably going to be maybe April before that happens. But yeah, it's kind of throwing a kind of a clinch in our gardening type plans. But again, I'm not going to complain, because the minute I complain, you know, it'll just stop raining and we'll never get any.
Well, one of the most underappreciated aspects of your job is the massive amount of publication that not just you, but the Extension Service as a whole puts out. Mackenzie, have you had to work on the publication side of things, typing papers and epistles and getting things, information disseminated to all corners of the state?
Yes, sir. I think we've worked on a bunch of different things. So, yeah.
Every day is another project. So,
yeah, different thing every day.
Now, how do you disseminate this? I mean, of course, it all goes on the websites, but do you do, like, inner office for each of the county agents, the stuff that might not be for publication for the general public, but information useful to county agents?
You know, on occasion, first of all, taking the public side of it, in the olden days, we would have sent these to Athens. They would all been printed, and every office would have had 5 billion publications sitting up on the wall. Well, as the budgets got tighter, now that everything's gone online, and many county agents will still have printed publications sitting on their racks, but maybe not to the magnitude that we used to. So that being said, everything is pretty much available online that we write. If you just go to UGA Extension Publications, that first link, that'll bring you there, and just put in the search engine what you're looking for. I want information on growing lettuce. I want information on growing marigolds, and we probably have a publication on it. To answer your question, we do have some in-office type information that goes out to the county agents on occasion. Usually it's through a listserv. Another way we do it is, like, I'll be doing a webinar next Tuesday that will be kind of a vegetable update for county agents. So I'll talk about some of the things I see coming up with this weather we've been having, some of the new varieties we've been trialing. And so that's only going to go to them via webinar, and they can tune in and take notes or whatever. And oftentimes, you know, we'll send out a little fact sheet on that. So, yeah, they get some sort of behind-the-scenes information. But the minute I give it to them, I mean, and it's supposed to work. It's like telling your hairdresser or whatever, you know, it's supposed to be gossiped out to the world, and that's what they do. And then I say that kind of facetiously, but at the end of the day, you know, I give them the information so that they can take it and send it out to the public.
Well, you have mentioned how technology has changed your job in the last 20 years with the, you know, instant availability of computers, and people can send you pictures and stuff. Mackenzie, we're going to bring you in. Have you had the opportunity to teach Bob a little bit about smartphone technology and its use in the field with some of the things that he does?
He knew a lot coming in, but he learned something new every day.
I mean, you know, you young people are so
well,
amazing.
Well, I think you made the incorrect statement. I heard you earlier something about, you know, Bob just loves the new technology that we have. Bob's scared to death of the new technology.
Well, I mean, you like the fact that you can get a picture.
I do.
And, you know, it's not a 2 or 3 week mailing process anymore.
But Bob just never gets to ever go on vacation because he has his phone with him, and the emails and everything else continues to come in, and I'm bad about it. I just can't ignore it because I just want to help someone. I'm going to answer it. So I'm like, it just never goes away like it used to. So. But Mackenzie, I'm all the time asking her, hey, how do we make the computer do this? How do we make it do that? My phone's doing this. I've never been like a high-tech guy. I have basically done the minimum to survive. And, you know, the computer guys, I'm their job security on the Griffin campus, and we've got great computer support. I'll put that punch in right now on the Griffin campus. And they know when I call, it's like, you know, first thing every computer guy says, well, shut the computer off, turn it back on, and see if that fixes it. And I'll be dogged half the time it doesn't. But every now and then I'm like, no, I've been there, done that. Guys, get over here and help me. And they're great. But yeah, I'm not going to troubleshoot too much along the electronic lines before I'm calling somebody.
But by the same token, you can be out in the field and access some of these UGA websites.
Yeah.
And that's got to be useful that you don't have to go back to the office and find out what a soil temperature may be. Or, you know, what might be distinct to that one situation.
Absolutely. It's very helpful with that. Or if there's a chemical that I can't quite recall, I'm specifically looking for a herbicide or a pesticide. I'm like, what is that? I know how to get into the UGA Pesticide Control Handbook from my phone and look that up. Another big advantage, I guess, for consumers and growers is that with the new technology there, I'll have a county agent live in a field call me up and almost like a FaceTime, show me the plant and say, hey, what do you think about this? I'm looking at it from my office, and instantly I can say, hey, that looks like, you know, nitrogen deficiency, or check that thing for whiteflies. So the turnaround time is so much faster. Or even if they take a digital photo, and that's real popular, they'll take digital images, they'll send them to me via computer, and I'm looking at them. And many times if I see it that day, I'll pull it up, look at it, and say, yeah, I think this is what's going on. Versus the old school way we used to do it, and it still happens, is someone will take a sample on Friday of, let's just say, a holly plant that has got some specks on it. You know, they're going to put it in the mail. That thing hangs around all weekend long. Then it finally gets in the mail on Monday. Tuesday or Wednesday, it gets to my office. I open it up. It looks like, you know, Aunt Edna's ashes when I dump it out, because it's all turned into dust.
It's the old Kansas song.
And I got to see what's going on with it. And by the time we ever get back to the consumer, you know, it could be 3 weeks later. So it has definitely rapid-fired how we can make responses.
Well, Mackenzie, being young, I know that I'm sure you have a proclivity for taking very clear and nice pictures via the smartphone. Mine always tend to come out somewhat blurred.
Mine do too.
And I don't know why. You know, have your skills been put to use and helping Bob with some of that? You know, I just don't suspect there's all that many occasions where Bob sees something truly novel to him. But by the same token, I'm sure, you know, I've never seen this type of rot on this particular plant before. How about taking a picture and we'll see about analyzing it? I mean, have you found that you had to take on that role somewhat?
We haven't really taken much pictures yet, but I know it's probably coming. So.
It's coming.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got to get to the spring season and when things really start to bloom.
And the funny thing, you're talking about the smartphones. You know, I've got used to be a really good digital camera. I mean, I got it like 10 or 12 years ago, and it's a sort of the lower professional line of the Canon series. And we have used that thing to death, taking digital photos for publications and all. But I'll be dogged if you know, she'll send me a picture on her phone or whatever, or I'll send something. The dang cell phone pictures are pretty good now, and I have literally used them right off the phone into a publication, and I couldn't tell it didn't come off that, you know, $3,000 camera I got sitting in the office. So I think the phones are coming a long way on the technology. And we were talking about this the other day. My wife and I were saying, you know, we're getting all kinds of snapshots and pictures and with all this stuff of our grandkids, which we love to death. I told my wife, you know, I think you could hunt in all the different houses I grew up in, you could probably find 5 pictures of me from the time, you know, I was born till I was 16 or 17. We just never took pictures.
And if you did,
it was an ordeal. You know, Dad had to take it to the Photoshop kiosk and, you know, then go through them. And you just didn't have pictures of when you were younger. So it's come such a long way. And with that being said, though, you don't see as many people printing pictures, you know, and everything's sort of stored on a drive somewhere, or what do they call this, the cloud. You know, I suppose they have all kinds of stuff that the computer guys tell me in the cloud up there, and I'm like, well, that's dangerous. I don't know where the cloud is, but the technology right now is exponential, and it's certainly going rapid fire. I can't keep up with it.
You and me either one, but we're going to take this quick commercial time out. We've got to get some announcements in, a lot of upcoming activities on the University of Georgia Griffin campus. You're listening to the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News on WKEU AM 1450 in Griffin, Georgia. Also heard on 102.3 FM as well as 88.9 FM The Rock, Georgia Public Radio at its finest. Our Thursday morning program will continue after this. Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farms, We Build Forest, and Murray Company Realty, proud supporters of the University of Georgia Griffin campus, and proud to bring you this installment of the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News over WKEU AM 1450, 102.3 FM, and 88.9 FM The Rock, Georgia Public Radio at its finest. The Harris's involvement with the students of today ensure for our community a brighter tomorrow. In news and announcements from the UGA Griffin campus, an evening at UGA Author Entertainment Series will begin on Tuesday, March 31st, starting at 6 p.m. on the campus. Carolyn Newton Curry will be discussing her work, Suffer and Grow Strong, The Life of Ella Gertrude Clanton Thomas. Register for this initial event in the series by visiting the UGA Griffin Campus Office of Continuing Education at ugagriffincontinuinged.com or by calling 770-229-3477. The Franklin College of Arts and Sciences will be hosting Psych Day 2020 Friday, April 17th in the Student Learning Center. This year, the topic will be Suicide Awareness, When the Living is Stronger than the Fear of Dying. To register for the free conference, please go to www.griffin.uga.edu. The 2020 Iris Walk will be held on April 20th at the beautiful University of Georgia Griffin Campus Education and Research Garden, located at 129 West Ellis Road. The Flint River Iris Society will host the informative guided tour during the noon hour. The event is free and open to the public. Future Griff Dog Night will take place on April 28th on the campus. Parents and students interested in learning about a UGA degree right here in Griffin are welcome to attend. The event is open to the public and free of charge. Register by visiting the UGA Griffin website. Again, that site, www.uga.griffin.edu. Want to learn more about the campus? Take a personal tour and get the insights on what it takes to finish your degree or to pursue a higher one. Tours are scheduled from time to time throughout the year. Call 770-412-4400 to schedule your own. The campus store, located on the first floor of the Flint Building at 1109 Experiment Street, has new UGA and Georgia Bulldog items arriving weekly. The shelves are stocked with officially licensed University of Georgia apparel, souvenirs, and gifts. Campus store hours are Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. And for information on degrees offered on the UGA Griffin campus, undergraduate and graduate degree information offered through the 5 colleges can be obtained by visiting griffin.uga.edu or by calling 770-412-4400. And we welcome you back on the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News. We had a little Munsters interlude there. Having to explain to Mackenzie English, one of our guests today, she's a program assistant and a student at Gordon College, that's not Fallout Boy, that's not Uma Thurman we're listening to. It's actually the old theme of the Munsters program, which, you know, there's a little bit of a generation gap there. But, you know, where do you find, you always have, you know, very nice, very polite assistants. Where do you find these people?
I get them from church.
Well, that's probably a good place to look, because, I mean, it is never
I would say 90% of the folks I've hired actually come out of church. Yeah, I get great quality folks. I like the smart ones, first of all, you know. And the only problem I ever have is when you get the higher achiever ones, they tend to be real active. And you know, instead of having nothing to do with their life, you know, if they can come and work for you all the time, you got folks like Mackenzie that actually think it's important to go to school and to be, you know, involved in sports and stuff. So you have to kind of work around that. But no, I get great quality kids. I've had several from my church that I've known, grown up with, taught Sunday school to, that I say, hey, you want to come work for us at University of Georgia? And always, you know, it's worked out very well. So, you know, there's a lot of good people out there, but I know some people will hire what they call blind, you know, here's a name, let's just hire them, whatever. And I like to know who I'm getting.
Well, when it comes to extension agents around the, you know, there are 159 counties, and we had previously discussed, you know, they're just in a period of turnover because of budget restrictions and other reasons. But do you have any say or in who gets hired, or do you make recommendations if it's, you know, people that you might know or that you know, have some familiarity with?
Right. Yeah. No, I don't really have any say over the county operations since I'm in a department. I'm in the horticulture department, and it's completely separated from the county offices. We do have a district here in Griffin that would hire for this Northwest district. There's four districts in the state. Each one would have kind of a leader that is the main person that does the hiring. But yeah, I mean, if because, you know, in all my travels, I'll know some folks. I might get a call at, hey, do you know of such and such? What do you think about them? And so sometimes they'll call me and ask if I know them, or I'll give out a recommendation. Hey, this guy or this lady's looking for a job. I think they'd be really good. And so sometimes I'll take an active role that way.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure the letters of recommendation, the request for them come in rather often.
I have written several of those. Yeah, I almost want to kind of like just make one letter up and say just insert name here. But I always start off, you know, with a fresh one, depending on what's what. But
well, Mackenzie, let me just offer this one piece of unsolicited advice. When you go to Southern Crescent and you're trying to get in the enrollment process, ask for a letter of recommendation for Bob. His believe it or not, his name does carry an awful lot of weight in this region.
Yeah, he told me that he would write me a nice one.
as long as she keeps working well, we'll do that. And I'm sure she will.
I mean, you've had so many assistants such as Mackenzie over there. I mean, do you are able to keep up with some of them since you found some of them at church? And what are some of the endeavors they're now involved in?
Well, I'm sad to say not a soul has gone into horticulture, so I failed completely there. I had Adrian Todd, who's now Adrian Fritchie, worked for me for probably the longest period of time, almost like 6 years. I had her since high school, and she is now a speech therapist, actually in the Spalding County school systems, I believe. So she's doing real good. My daughter's super friends with her, so I kind of keep up that way.
Your daughter has been an assistant of yours?
My daughter's been assistant, right,
working at the university. She is in medical school?
She's in med school. I had another lady named Kaylee Anderson, and she is now an attorney up in Atlanta.
So if you ever get in trouble medically or legally, you're covered.
Or if I have problems speaking, I'll call Adrian, I guess. So, yeah, we've had quite a few come through, and they all have kind of moved on to better and bigger things.
Well, Mackenzie, I know the semester doesn't end for a while, but are you keeping up with the grades? I mean, Bob has touted your intellectual capabilities. Are you keeping up?
Yes, sir. They're pretty good.
I mean, what are you majoring in as your associates?
Right now I'm nursing, but that's to get my sciences and stuff done at Gordon. But once I transfer to Southern Crescent, then I'll go into the radiology program.
Which of the sciences have you found the most appealing?
Anatomy. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's going to go hand in hand with your field if you decide to stick with the radiology. But, you know, hopefully you've been able to pick up some things here from the plant and gardening world that you will be able to carry with you in your pursuit of a radiology degree. And we wish you all the luck in that. We thank you for being here. Bob, it's always a pleasure to have you. Anything that gardeners need to know in the last minute of our program?
Well, I'd say don't give up. The rain eventually is going to stop. Don't get too eager to get in the garden. It's too wet and it's too cool. Soil temperatures are in the 50s right now. We really want to see soil temperatures creep up to around 60, 65 before you start planting spring gardens. But be patient, get a good plan for your garden, and you'll be ready to go.
Well, Bob, it's always a pleasure to have you. Bob Westerfield, Extension Horticulturalist and Coordinator on the UGA Griffin campus, who has statewide responsibilities, and Mackenzie English, Program Assistant and aspiring softball player, and well, not aspiring, she's actually doing it at Gordon College, playing in the outfield, and soon will be exploring a degree in nursing and radiology. We wish you all the luck in the world. Bob, can't wait to have you back. I learned so much when you're here, and I hope that you'll take the time to join us next Thursday morning between 9 and 10 a.m. for the next edition of the University of Georgia Griffin Campus News.
Thanks for joining us for today's program of UGA Griffin Campus News. Listen each Thursday morning at 9 for UGA Griffin Campus News on WKEU AM 1450, 102.3 FM, and The Rock 88.9 FM, and streamed live on the WKEURadio.com website. Today's program was made possible by Frank and Carolyn Harris of Round Oak Resources Tree Farm and Murray & Company Realtors.